Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Douglas Mellard Esquire, how do you do?
Well, hello, Doug Benson the Third.
Oh, man. Esquire. That's a fun one. I just add your name because is anybody ever really officially Esquire?
Bill S. Ted. What is it? Bill yeah, from Bill and Ted?
Yeah, Bill and Ted. They're always throwing it around. Yeah, it feels like a more of a royalty thing or something, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, our distinguished guest today is a comedian and actor you might know from various TV shows and movies I'm not going to mention because we're striking against them currently. But his name, I can say, it's Guy Branum.
Yeah. I'm very curious to talk about the word guy as a name.
Yeah, right? It's Monday, September 18th, and we're recording this episode a few days early because we got a busy-ass week. I'm coming to Austin, Texas for a Fantastic Fest. And what are you doing this week, Doug?
I'm going to Dan Cummins' Bad Magic Summer Camp for adults.
Of course you are. Of course.
Yeah, why wouldn't I?
Yeah. So I'm going to be in Austin this week, but I'm not doing any shows. I'm just at Fantastic Fest enjoying the festival. And then,
oh, nice.
Yeah, and then I'm coming back in October and doing two shows at Cap City, one of which you will be on, which is a stand-up show on October
24th.
So that means I'm doing Douglas Movies on October 25th. And like I said, it's at Cap City at the Domain. But anyway, no more ado. Let's get to our guest. And he's a really good guy. Let's go to work.
Got it.
Hello, Guy Branum. How are you?
Hello, I'm doing well. I'm excited to be so surrounded by Dougs.
that's a pretty intimidating Dougs if you feel surrounded by just two of us.
I had a glorious revelation about Dougs last night.
Ooh,
it's not big. I feel like I shouldn't start off the show with it, but at some point in time, ask me for my revelation about Dougs.
Okay, let me write that down because there's no way I'm going to remember to ask. Should I do it? Should it be right towards the end?
I mean, it's wherever. It's not that good. No one's going to be that interested in it. And I can't open up with it.
Let's build it.
Well, I will say this to start things off, Guy. You have been an ongoing champion on Doug Loves Movies. And in the most recent episode, which I assume not everyone's heard yet, we won't say how that one turned out. But since you've been coming back episode after episode during the part where I ask everybody to recommend a movie, you've been very into recommending different works by actress, director, writer Sarah Pauley.
Yes.
And why did I bring that up? Like, I had all that stuff to say before getting to my point. And I was like, I got it. It's back. You were talking in the most recent show we got on the subject of the movie Go that she is in.
Yeah.
And I think she's terrific in that movie. And Do you know the name of the director of that movie?
Doug Lemon.
Yeah, it's a Doug.
Oh, yeah, it is a Doug.
Steve, that's why we all didn't know where the hell I was going with that.
And it was written by John August, who is busy fighting the fight for the WGA. He's one of our brave leaders.
Well, that was the next thing I was going to ask you about. And that, it's a really good screenplay. Like, I could see, you know, how it got produced. And Doug Liman was a hot director coming off of Swingers, I think. And but he's made, you know, for a Doug, he's made some pretty cool movies. He made Edge of Tomorrow and Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I didn't realize he made Edge of Tomorrow. It was one of those Edge of Tomorrow, like, completely went past me. And when I finally watched it streaming, I was like, what a tight drum of a conceit. Like, there are sometimes like with Inception where like this movie is very full of itself and it's not a good movie. And like Edge of Tomorrow was like just I have this nasty belief that straight guys love movies that are mousetraps, like that are just like complex mousetraps because you guys have no conflict in your lives. Like Edge of Tomorrow was like just the right amount of mousetrap for my taste.
That's like, it's true. That's why escape rooms are so popular with young white affluent people. Oh, that's great. That movie really is constructed so well. And then I forget everybody that was in it, but I just remember the supporting actors really doing so much heavy lifting. Like, I know Tom Paxton was in it, the late great Tom Paxton.
Emily Blunt,
and then who was the other, like, sort of a major role in it? Character actor, maybe. But anyway, they had to, like in the case of Tom Paxton, they had to keep repeating the exact Tom Cruise's day over and over again, just with these slight variations.
I mean, it's wonderful to watch that kind of, like, to see good actors do something like that is always such a pleasure.
Yeah, it's really good. And his name's Bill Paxton. I'm sitting there going, Tom Paxton and who else? And I'm like, okay, Grandpa, you don't need to talk
Tom about Blunt.
Movies. Yeah.
Doug, may I pitch you a possible special episode for Doug Loves Movies?
Oh, sure.
Sometime in the spring, in award show season, I think you should do a I Can Say It, You Can't, Oops All Fags episode. I think you should have me and, do you know who Louis Vertel is?
Yes.
Like, get me and Louis Vertel. There's this guy, Chris Schleicher. There are other options, but just like gay guys who know too much about awards movies and actresses. And just, you know, like, Doug Loves Movies is a beautiful domain for the posanes who have seen every action film. But to just have one episode that is Oops All Fags.
Did you see Brian just shaking his head the other day when in every round of that game Rent came up?
It's beautiful to watch one of the great struggle, you know?
Yeah, that was fun. That was really fun. but yes, okay, that's a great idea. But, you know, make sure you remind me about it closer to award season, which award season may be moving away. They already moved the Emmys from September to January. And who knows what's going to happen to the Oscars with this damn strike. Go ahead.
Oh, just midsummer Oscars. Suddenly it's the VMAs.
I mean, the VMAs want to be the Oscars. That thing was 4.5 hours long the other night. It was insane.
And so full of people I had never heard of.
Mm-hmm. It's really like, kind of, you could just sort of sit down and just in those few hours find out who all the current pop stars are that you just wouldn't know about if you didn't watch that shit. So the strikes, though, with regards to that, there's been a development since you and I last talked, and that's that these talk show hosts, people who were intending to go on with the idea of we're doing it without writers, are all starting to buckle, and the shows are all starting to, shut down and not go ahead.
I'm so surprised and proud because, you know, like 15 years ago or 17 years ago, whenever it happened last time, All of the late night hosts came back, quote unquote, without writers, but of course they were paying writers under the table and had jokes. And I think so many people in talk thought that they could just do that. But I'm also just kind of surprised because like it makes me feel strong as labor that we managed to like get them to back down and show solidarity, but stunned that Bill Maher did it. Like, I just feel like Bill Maher, I'm so surprised that Bill Maher was cooperative with anyone who, you know, isn't a blonde Republican consultant.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, but it's just everybody, it seems like the people that are making the decision to stop are either seeing what's happening to other people who aren't making the right decision and then, you know, not wanting that for them, but like in the case of Drew and Bill, it's both just sort of like they put it out there, like, you know, pretty brazenly, like, hey, here's why I think I should be able to keep going, and then everyone went no, and they both backed down. So like, you know, it's nice to see that works. I hate that some people like were like, oh, everybody's bullying Drew Barrymore, but they're not bothering Jennifer Hudson about this. And it's like, well, Jennifer Hudson didn't make a video of herself crying, saying the show had to happen. There's nothing she could do about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Jennifer Hudson also now has backed off and is not going in. Or, you know, they say they're not going to debut, that they're postponing their debuts, but I think they're all going to go ahead and keep making episodes, which I think is already also a little scabby, even though they won't air them. Yeah.
I mean, you know, anything we're doing to impact content and make it harder for the companies. I'm really impressed that these people are cooperating and supporting, like, any degree of solidarity is surprising to me. I just think people are so bad at cooperating.
Yeah, but in this case, you know, it's been looking pretty good as far as actor and writer solidarity. There's only an occasional screwball like that guy that makes Yellowstone who came out and was like, there should only be one writer on a show if I only want one writer. And that's me.
I truly love the place of old fogies in television production. I mean, there need to be those shows. It, you know, it's ridiculous how popular they are, but exciting for moms and dads who need to watch five different Westerns that are each just named a year.
Those shows also, they're kind of like somewhat historical drama. So I feel like the dude just kind of just takes stories from history and, you know, and acts like he's, you know, coming up with it all by himself.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he doesn't need a room to break stories because he's just taking stories that exist and, you know, sticking them into a show.
Well, it's also like, first of all, like, I think dramas are easy. Oh, you put a conflict in front of someone? That's so hard. Maybe dramas, you can't have one person write them. Also, my best friend is a drama writer, and I know that that's not true. But for comedies, you need jokes. And like, in trying to pare down the size of rooms, in paring down the number of episodes in an order, we've gotten to a point where we can't fucking make a comedy anymore. And it really pisses me off that these people who are trying to like pass along earnings reports to shareholders are destroying one of America's best industries. Like, entertainment makes so much money for America. It inspires so many people to want to come here. It produces so much less pollution than like computers or cars or anything else. And like, they're trying to they're trying to cut open the golden goose, and it pisses me off.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Doug, your thoughts?
I just love the passion behind that speech. It was perfect.
I knew you didn't have anything ready. Like, what would you say? What would Doug, you say after that?
I'm not going to add anything to that.
Doug M., what is your comfort food? What is your comfort food television? What is your comfort food movie?
Well, we joke about it a lot. I watch the film Roadhouse quite a bit.
Ugh, that man's a goddamn talent. That man is a supple, live, goddamn talent. I mean, I understand you're a man, you need to watch Roadhouse, but just no one else could do what he did in Dirty Dancing. No one else could do that.
Right.
No, he's got a few of those. Like, he was a real movie star in the sense that, like, you know, like when they remade Point Break, like, what? There's gonna be a guy playing the Patrick Swayze role?
Yeah, come on.
Well, I mean, like, it is that magnificent skill. Like, his superpower was that he had an extremely gay skill set, but always seemed super straight.
Yeah, absolutely. I just saw To Wong Fu again recently, and you know, his level of commitment in that movie is pretty impressive.
I wanted to remember that movie as bad in sort of a Priscilla is good, that movie is bad kind of way. And then I rewatched it for a podcast about movies that are the same. Like, Matt Kirshen and I forget who else have a podcast that's like for basically for Deep Impact and Asteroid or whatever they want. Deep Impact and Armageddon.
Armageddon.
But I rewatched To Wong Fu, and I'm like, no, this movie's wonderful. That movie's so good.
It really is. It's, you know, it's a little corny, but those three guys, Wesley Snipes and Leguizamo and Swayze, they just commit so hard to it. Like, they were just, you know, and I don't know how much they, you know, empathize with the roles or whatever, but they were just like actors who were just like, well, I'm just going to really go for this.
Okay,
and
that's what I think the really interesting question is when it comes to casting gay, straight people or gay people as gay. Like, for such a, like, of course we as a community have to be like, why can't you cast gay people? Because they're always casting straight people as gay. But the thing is like, there's just a minimal amount of trying and a minimal amount of thinking that can make for really good performances that we truly have not asked out of people. When you look at the when you look at these performances, like, you know, Woody Harrelson in Friends with Benefits, or like, you know, that's just one of them. That's a terrible example, but like, there are so many of them that are like, did you think? Did you even just think about it? Or the classic problem of like. Okay, well, first of all, straight women who play lesbians do nothing but touch each other's hair. They just love touching each other's hair. And that's not what lesbians do.
Yeah, I'm sure they really change it up and do other stuff.
Yes, because they're attracted to women. And I just
like a man would write that, like, because that's what he likes about a nice lady is their hair.
But like with my friend Emily, who's been watching all of the farces, we watched Victor Victoria at her place the other night, and like, it's fucking Robert Preston. It's the fucking Music Man playing a gay guy, and he fucking milks it and sells it and has so much fun.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that, you know, there has been throughout history, like Jack Lemmon and some like It Hot, and, you know, a few others, Dustin Hoffman, even though Tootsie's so full of, you know, non-consensual things happening.
Yes, yes.
It's still, you know, he still very much commits to the role in a way that's, you know, endearing. And, you know, so that's happened a lot over the years, but it's still like, okay, we've done that. So let's go ahead and let people represent themselves more, even though some actors, you know, come forward and they grumble, you know, like, you know, I should be able to play anything. I'm an actor. And it's like, well, okay, and go buy yourself a small little theater and pretend you're a bug in a Kafka play or something, and, you know, and leave us alone. You know, like, it doesn't have to be in a major motion picture.
Well, you know, I truly love that anyone can play anything. But the question of, like, why for all of time has the best person for the job always been a straight white guy is very frustrating. And it's interesting now to watch, like, just how simply, like, one success like Crazy Rich Asians opened up the world to shit like Joyride and so much other stuff. Or, like, you know, to me, after The Birdcage, there was a brief window when the studios were like, could we make money off of gay people? And they made like four very good movies that lost money, and then, you know, everything was darkness for 15 years. But that still meant a lot to me.
Yeah, you probably wore out those VHS tapes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's another Birdcage is another example. It's such a solid movie. I mean, it's based on a solid movie because La Cage aux Folles is really good too.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it was the same movie beat for beat. Like Elaine May put in some Bob Dole jokes, but like the bones were there.
Yeah, no, it's definitely theft of some bones there. Somebody was in a graveyard in the middle of the night. getting a hefty helping of bones, but you know, just cast like these incredible actors that were all beloved at the time, you know, so it's just a really, really enjoyable movie. Okay, so you know, I love movies, that's what that other podcast is about, but here. Yes. Here we're here to talk about names, and we don't mind any kind of sidebars or you know, derailments of any kind, just whatever you want to talk about works for us. But let me ask you some warm-up questions. Sure. Before we get to your name, I saw, you know, you were wearing some shorts when I saw you the other day, and I don't think there are any tattoos in the mix. Do you have any tattoos?
I do not have any tattoos.
Zero tattoos.
Zero tattoos. I was in Palm Springs with gay guys for Labor Day weekend, and my friend Kevin noted, like, here are six gay guys sitting around a table and there are no tattoos. Like, what a group of teachers' pets we are. And it really is true. You know, you're, as a Jew, you're not supposed to, but more than that, I was also just... I don't want to make a decision and have it be a mistake, and have that on my body for the rest of my life. But do you know Leslie Arfin, Paul Rust's wife?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the creator of Love on Netflix. I worked on a show with her like 10 years ago, and she's covered in tattoos. And I was like, how do you not hate them? And she was like, oh, hating them is the best part. And I was like, what? And she essentially made the argument that like it forces you to like acknowledge and be in contact with your former selves. And I was like, what a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
But still none for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm no tattoos. Doug's got plenty. And
I've got so many that I hate.
We just like to ask because it's just sort of, you know, not always a fun thing to talk about, but it's even fun when somebody doesn't have tattoos because there's always... You know, there's always reasons, you know.
Yes, yes.
And but what about, here's another thing that's in the realm of like naming things and things that kind of have permanence, and that is have you named any pets in your lifetime?
I named a couple of our dogs, but more significantly, an even better pet, my sister let me give her daughter pick out her middle name. And it was
really nice.
Yeah, it was. Well, my sister then commenced to abandon the child as an infant and leave it for my parents to raise. And so I think, you know, realizing that I was going to be more invested in taking care of the kid if I had, like, you know, as a stakeholder investment, it was probably a good move.
You were partially involved in naming the baby, so yeah, you're attached, you're imprinted.
And her middle name is Nurit, which is Hebrew for buttercup. Also, just, you know, there's nothing like a nice middle name to clearly mark you by your ethnicity, you know, so that anyone looking at full paperwork can be like, yup, put that one in the train for the camp.
All right. So you named dogs? Is that what you said? You named two dogs?
Yeah. I mean, again, sort of boring, there was a Zev, which is Hebrew for wolf, for a German shepherd, not like crazy.
Boring though.
Oh, and when I was in third grade, we got a German shepherd and I wanted to name it after my third grade teacher. I wanted to name it Carol. And my parents, My parents would not let me name it Carol. Aww. So, and her last name was Sanger. So we had a wonderful German Shepherd, possibly the most vicious German Shepherd we've ever had, named Sanger. But I, as a little 8-year-old, was just like, I want to name her Carol.
It's even better than it's a German Shepherd.
Yeah, yes. You had really good instincts. That would be every time somebody saw somebody yelling for Carol and that dog shows up. That'd be so funny. That's such a perfect name for a German Shepherd. I love that. Okay, so what about things that you've owned, like cars, or, you know, probably haven't owned any boats, but, you know, like things that one would name, like, have you been that kind of person? Do you, or like, you know, we've had women on the show that are like, you mean like my breasts? And I guess there's dudes that do name their junk and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not one of those guys.
I didn't figure you would be, guy.
Yeah, I've never had like a name for a car or anything like that.
You never drove around a car that was like that you'd nicknamed the sex mobile?
No, I mean, they have given names, you know, the Bronco. Am I going to give a white Ford F-150 a name that says more about it than white Ford F-150? yeah, and like, truly never named my body parts. They're just so evident on their own.
Yeah, it seems like a silly thing to do. I mean, all that stuff is like, I've never been a person to, you know, name my car or whatever, unless I had a, you know, really specific joke. Like when I drove a Nissan, I would tell people its first name was Liam, but that was just, you know, that was just joking around.
That is a quality joke.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't really think my car was named Liam. So, thank you for, you know, your honest, straightforward answers to all of our warm-up questions. And now we'll move on to the main part of the interview. We'll do that right after this break. We'll be right back.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We are back with Guy Branum, and we're going to break it down. We're going to talk about your name part by part, starting with your first name. Tell us about growing up, Guy.
It's horrible. You constantly think people are talking about you, or the number of times that I would speak to someone for the first time and they would say, "Hey, Guy." And I thought that they knew me, and they were like, "Oh no, that is just how I greet people." And it sounds like a lot of other words and like sky and stuff like that. And so there's a lot of like thinking that people are talking about you.
Your Starbucks experience must be awful.
The standard, you know, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. the standard. Oh, well, okay. I'm sorry. Well, two things that just the standard sort of like, oh, there was nothing ever, never anything with my name on it at Disneyland. That one's a given. But also, I cannot recommend enough Doug's being a clearly, obviously homosexual third grader and having the name Guy. Like, it's not that much math for dumb children to do. So I was from third grade through eighth grade just called Gay Guy. And, you know, it, like, to this day, it leads to situations where people will call me gay. You know, nice, well-meaning people who don't, like, it is just a slip of the tongue, but it's also, like, the most Freudian slip of the tongue. And, like, it doesn't bother me because, yes, that's obviously one of the first things that you, it's one of the basic things you know about me, which is fine. But, yeah, it wasn't great. But it was short. That was my mother's, like, in deciding on names for my sister and I, she wanted our names to be short so that we wouldn't have anything long to write when we were in first grade. And so it was always short, which I appreciate.
Yeah, it's right to the point. It's definitely some also fun, challenging letters for a child to write, and especially like in cursive and whatnot. Yes. But so
there's
like
also a long game to think about.
So like I get the shortness of it, but there's so many short names that like don't have like what I'm trying to get at. What did was there any discussion ever of did you think ahead of how this name would be I would get abused by having this name?
My parents did not think about that. But you know, once people started yelling gay at me, they were more like, it's not our fault. You should stop acting gay. If you would stop acting gay, all of this would go away. Which is truly a great way of shaking down an 8-year old.
Right. And but do you feel like is there a silver lining to it that like it made it easier for you to be gay?
Not really.
In a sense or no?
No, I mean, it really did sort of like it helped underline what the issue was. That's a really great like thought experiment. Would the kids have so easily labeled me as gay if my name weren't that? But it made it very clear to me from a young age. Oh, my parents will not be cool if this is the case. And so, you know, I tried to run from it for a time. But it was always nice having a name that nobody else had. Like I liked that. It is always weird when I deal with guys now. And one time I did go on a date with another guy named Guy, and I was like, this is hot.
Well, I mean, there are some, you know, for lack of a better expression, cool guys out there. There's something I think about being named Guy is like kind of an invitation to flamboyance, whether you're gay or not. It's still like, especially in the 60s and 70s, I think of the name Guy, I immediately see somebody like wearing an ascot. You know what I mean? Like, there's a guy who directed a bunch of James Bond movies named Guy Hamilton.
Yeah.
And, there was also the famous band leader that you'd always hear about every New Year's named Guy Lombardo.
Yeah, I mean, it does have some flamboyance to it. And there is that, like, I was, like, ridiculously old, especially for somebody who, like, thinks and reads as much as I do, to realize that my name was just short for Guillaume. But, I mean, that does sort of tie you to, I mean, if you want guys, you have to go to Canada or Britain or France, you know? And then one of the reasons, so Guy was my paternal grandfather's name. So it was my dad's dad. But one of the reasons my mom liked it was because it was also like a Hebrew name. It means ravine. So there are also lots of, you know, sexy guys, in Israel with, you know, loaded weapons.
Another guy that I thought of was, the news reporter Muppet.
Oh, Guy Smiley.
His name is Guy Smiley.
Whoa, oh yeah.
As a child, the references I got the most were Guy Lombardo and Guy Smiley.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, I don't think anybody was bringing up the director of James Bond. I was trying to think of if there's any other guys I remember, but yeah, it does have a It's got a lot of personality, that name. Like, it's immediately gets your attention. But what about, so for you though, you're not technically, are you technically Guillaume?
No, I'm just Guy.
And it was, yeah, because she wanted to keep it short. But it could, that could be, that is, I didn't even think I was going to ask if there is a long version of Guy. And that, I guess that makes sense, Guillaume.
Yeah.
And again, that's probably more French than anything, right?
Yes. And like one of my like my opening joke for like the first 7 years I was doing stand up was just a joke about how there's no nickname for Guy. And, you know, it is one of those things where like there's nothing you can do to make it more intimate or more formal. It's just what it is.
Yeah. You can't dress it up or down.
Yeah.
It's just, hey, Guy. What's up, Guy? I love it because it just, if you know, in some ways it makes it easier because so many people resort to Guy just when they're talking to somebody whose name they don't know or can't remember.
Yeah.
So people might accidentally call you Guy just because they can't remember if your name's Guy or not.
No, like,
or it's very... dude.
oh yeah. That was part of the joke was, like, basically that my parents could not have exerted less effort in naming me unless they called me Hey Dude or That One Baby Over There. 20-year-old material.
And one on the end.
But yeah, there's something nice about having something a little bit distinctive. And I used to hate my name a lot, and now I enjoy it.
So you never had a any kind of inclination to change it for show business?
Not at all, because like for show business, it's just good that it's different and distinctive. But like there was that period of time in like seventh grade when girls were trying on like changing their names and stuff. And it didn't cross my mind that I was allowed to change anything about myself.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why we ask about tattoos, because they're permanent, but you can actually change them, and that's true of our names as well. You know that you can change it if you want to. Like what kind of middle name did you get saddled with a middle name, or do you like your middle name?
Okay, well that's the interesting thing is that so my grandpa was named Guy Bentley, but everybody just called him Bentley, and they intended to name me Guy Michael and just have everyone call me Michael. And so for the first 5 years of my life, I didn't know that my name was Guy. Everyone just called me Mikey. I got to kindergarten. It's like a Southern thing. It's weird, but I got to kindergarten and there were like five Michaels in the class, and the teacher was just like, no, he can't be Michael. And so my mom had to like explain to me that my name was Guy and that I was going to be doing that from then on. And it was very awkward. My mom wanted my middle name to be Micah, so that she could keep going biblical, even though Michael is biblical as well. But my dad was like, no, he can only have one weird name. His other name has to be regular.
So that's what they ended up. So it's officially Guy Michael Branham.
Yup.
GMB.
GMB.
Yeah. You know me.
Dougs, what are your middle names?
Kyle.
It's so funny. I would not. That's how we've been doing this show together. We talk about people's names every time, and I would not have been able to come up with Doug's middle name. What's mine, Doug?
I'm forgetting, but I know it. Damn it!
That's how little we care about middle names. Like even when somebody tells you what their middle name is, you don't remember it unless they put it like the initial or their name in like their social handles or something. You know, that's why I remember Sarah Silverman's middle name is Kate, because her socials say Sarah Kate Silverman on them.
Yeah.
But Kyle, I would not have come up with that. And mine is, mine's Steven.
Oh, I almost said that. Damn it.
You were so close.
Are both of you guys Douglases?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So we've discussed that about how, you know, much more distinguished a name that is. Like as soon as you take the last three letters off, then it's just Doug, you know, it's like, And if you wanted to be called Douglas, you'd probably be called Doug more than you'd care to be, because it's hard to get people not to make that habit or get into that. Like with Guy, that's the other thing that's, like you said, it's just fun that there's no, they can't add a Y to it, you know, because like with Doug, people like to say Dougie, and, you know, they just add a Y to whatever, whoever. But Guy Yee, that doesn't make any sense at all.
My first boyfriend called me Guy B, and I thought that was really innovative. But you guys, I think this is the perfect opportunity for me to say my Doug-related insight. Are you ready for it?
Oh, okay. I wrote down that I was going to ask you about it, but I'm ready whenever you are.
This is so dumb. I've been paying way too much attention recently to Canadian politics. And the thing about Canadian politics is the Conservatives almost never win. And I realized that that's because they can never just have a Rob. Like when they're like Canadian Conservatives, their leader is always named like Stockwell or Preston. And like, nobody's going to vote for Preston to make the country great again. You know, nobody's ever going to be like, oh, you want to know who's down to earth? Stockwell. And then I realized the closest thing they have is this guy named Doug Ford, who's just like a big fat guy who clearly loves beer, and they have let run Ontario for the last, I don't know, decade. And his brother was named Rob and smoked crack and was the mayor of Toronto. But like those guys, that's what you need out of a Canadian Conservative, a Doug.
Yeah, I mean, I always felt that I was, the shade was being thrown when the two dumb beer drinking guys on SCTV were called Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Wow. I didn't realize that it's Bob and Doug McKenzie, and then it's Bob and Doug Ford.
Yeah.
It's Rob and Doug Ford. But the point is
still Rob and Bob.
Yeah. Like, you know, is this one of the great truths of Canada? I guess so.
It might be. I don't know if we've uncovered it, if anybody else has noticed, but those Fords, they've taken the country on a wild ride. It's pretty crazy. And then that actor, what's the name of the guy that's on Homeland with Claire Danes, the redheaded guy?
Oh, I don't know.
I wasn't asking. Homeland.
I don't know.
He won an Emmy for it. You know, he's that red-haired, handsome actor. He's also on Billions.
Oh, Damian Lewis. I had to Google
yes.
it.
Yes. Yes, Damian Lewis. Damian Lewis played, I think, Rob Ford in a movie and did it like, you know, full on fat suit.
Oh wow. I don't love that.
It's awful.
Like it's just like for fat people, it's like you're too fat to play the role. You're too fat to play the role. Oh, we need a fat person. Well, we don't know if you can do it because you haven't done enough roles. And it does.
We need everybody to get to the set 5 hours early to get somebody ready. We can just hire somebody that just all they got to do is go to craft services for a minute.
The thing that pisses me off, and it's like one of those rare exciting moments that like I have a similar experience as a gay person and a fat person. The same way that like when straight people play gay, the guys love to be like, and then I had to kiss him. Or like in the Golden Globe speech that what's his name did for Dallas Buyers Club, he was like, and they had to shave all of my body, just talking about how insulting it is. And I like, truly, if you're gonna put people in fat suits for movies, at least don't make us watch the little promotional video that's like, oh, it took 5 hours. I almost sweat through the thing the whole time. It's like, calm down. Like,
yeah, he's just sitting there napping, dreaming about getting an Oscar.
Yes. The thing is, I was mad at The Whale, but The Whale's bad. I'm more mad at Dune because the Baron Harkonnen is like one of the best characters. And like, I'm glad that a Skarsgård is getting to do it, but you know, wouldn't it be great if some fat people got the chance to be Skarsgårds?
Well, that guy, you saw the first Dune, the David Lynch one, right?
Of course. That movie is so fucking good. Oh, and when I watched, we talked a month ago about me having recently watched Amadeus, but in one of the scenes that Milos Forman put back, the Baron Harkonnen is in it, in Amadeus, which was so exciting. But like, whoever that guy is in, like, David Lynch's Dune is so good, and it makes me kind of think that there maybe needs to be an element of camp in all good sci-fi. And I don't know if that's true or not. Gentlemen, fact check me.
Well, you know, that movie, just the shot that introduces Sting is just so, like, when he's in that weird diaper and he's all glistening and looks like, you know, Rocky Horror. You know, these days Sting would put on all the crazy makeup, you know, and some, like, it's just like they put him in exactly the role he should be in. And the guy who played the other guy, I think it was Kenneth McMillan, with all those weird like sores and stuff on his face.
it was so good. And also Sting entering like in metal underwear through like a steam bath.
That's what I'm talking about.
It was like too much for me as a 9-year-old.
You're like just saying to yourself, calm down, guy. You got this, guy. I mean, Mikey. Like a split personality. I mean, does Mikey ever come out? Like, do you ever have Mikey flashbacks?
No, truly no. It is like a recipe for a very different person, but also a person that I'm gladly not. Like, I think I've very much become a guy. Though, most of them are dead now, but there was a period of time when like older female relatives would show up and they would be like, Michael! And I would be like, wait, oh yes, this woman is referring to me. and it was a lot.
Let's go to the last name, Branum.
Branum.
Branum, B-R-A-N-U-M. That's not common, is it?
No, it's not. It was a spelling error in the South in the like 18th or 19th century. I think it was Branham, B-R-A-N-H-A-M. And then generations of illiterate people said it to other people and eventually it got written down as Branham. So I'm pretty sure that there are only Branhams in America.
Is that a common thing? Yeah.
What?
Is there a lot of last names getting butchered by illiterate Southern people?
Or just people real... in general that like just kind of, you know, want to mix it up for whatever reason. I'm always entertained by the Frederick Douglass story where, you know, that's just a made up name, the last name Douglass. And he put a second S on it because he just thought it looked classier. And I can't argue with it because
it looks classy.
It just without because the G, if the G were a C, it would end with class. It's true. So there's all sorts of people like, you know, families tweaking names for whatever reason. Usually shortening, it seems to be the main goal of these names that get twisted around. But
My grandmother's name was one of those like nice Jewish names that got hacked and pulled apart and made whiter a couple of different times over the course of history.
What about it's not, you don't think it's connected at all to the name Barnum?
Oh, I don't know. Like, well, I like in attempting to trace genealogy have come to the point where the spelling was changed. So like, it seems to be related to Branham, but people do sometimes say Guy Barnum or something like that. I don't know. I like never had any curiosity about, like, I should have thought about that before, to figure out where the name Barnum comes from.
Well, you know, and that dude, P.T. Barnum, you know, they made that movie. Hugh Jackman made that Greatest Showman movie, but, you know, made him into like a hero, but I guess he was kind of terrible. And so you're probably better off not being associated with him.
That's what movies are for. What are everyone's favorite biopics?
I'll tell you one that I love, love, love. I could just watch it like on a loop, and that's I, Tonya.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good. I like the skating. I like the outfits. I like the, you know, I don't like the domestic abuse so much, but as domestic abuse goes, the camera works flying around and the music's cool. So it like almost.
Paul Walter Hauser's so funny in it.
He's so funny in it.
I love that movie. I love that movie so much, but now I can only think of it as the reason Laurie Metcalf doesn't have an Oscar. Like, you know.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, Laurie, I think she'll be back.
I hope so. You know,
I like to think that she'll be back. She's so good. I've gotten to see her like in plays over the years, like maybe four or five different shows, including Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, she was gonna do Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and COVID killed it. But that's in my head, I imagined I saw her in it because she'd be so good.
I mean, it is just so awesome that like Aunt Jackie, who we all learned about as Aunt Jackie, at the end of the day is like a Steppenwolf actress from Chicago and can fucking kill it in anything. Doug M, what is your favorite biopic?
I mean, the freshest thing, Oppenheimer, Moneyball would count, right?
Yeah.
I love Moneyball. God, it's so good.
Yeah, Moneyball is one of my favorite. I'm not a sports movie person, but for some reason, I really love Moneyball.
There's just something about watching procedure and competence that is so satisfying. Like, for me, that sort of slow, methodical, we're going to do this and we're going to do this correctly is, like, very much a movie I enjoy.
Yeah, and it's satisfying along the way because he's got all these direct detractors and each one has to kind of eat shit at some point and realize that, you know, his ideas weren't so bad.
Well, and also, there's so much heart underneath it with the idea of these people were undervalued. These people were undervalued.
Right.
That really does feel, like, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Philip Seymour Hoffman, like, just the most intimidating fucking dude in that movie.
God,
he was a beast.
There's nothing fucking better than when Philip Seymour Hoffman consents to show up for like five or fewer scenes. Like when he just come in and blow you up. I just watched Magnolia. I don't know. I believe this I end my Sarah Pauly time. I seem to be segueing into a Paul Thomas Anderson time. But just like after all of the movies where he had to be like anger and fear and negativity, that he is mm-hmm. just sort of like the essence of warmth and, you know, is like literally a nursemaid. It's so beautiful to watch that performance.
Yeah. Paul Thomas Anderson says that he wrote that role for him and that's, he wrote like as close as he could write to his genuine personality.
Oh, that's lovely.
Cause he hadn't seen that on screen because he always plays such raging assholes usually.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, people who have a reason to have a stick up there. But I also love him in Along Came Polly because he gets to really cut loose and be silly in that movie.
You know, I've never seen Along Came Polly, which is strange because I love romantic comedies.
It's so funny because Ben Stiller cast, you know, they put Philip Seymour Hoffman in there and he's just like the Jack Black character and he completely commits to it. Oh, I also really like when he's... you know, his scene in Mission Impossible 3 when it's actually Tom Cruise, but Philip Seymour Hoffman has to still do the acting because of the stupid mask reveal. He's so good at like still giving a conveying that Tom Cruise is in there under the mask. He manages to do that.
delicious.
Yes. Rest in peace, Philip Seymour Hoffman. All right. So we've done a terrific job today. There's just a couple of things left to take care of. And one of them is every episode we name it some sort of, you know, pun or reference where we can stick the name Doug into the title, but nothing's come to me today. Have you thought of anything, Doug Mellor?
No, that's crazy.
Yeah.
There's usually something. Yeah. Easy along the way.
Oh, can I pitch something?
Yes.
The guy named Guy.
a guy named Guy with Guy Branum?
No, the guy. The guy. Doug. to God.
G-U-Y.
Yes.
G-U-Y, yeah.
The guy named Guy?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, it's just a pitch.
The guy named Guy. I see. So it's like D, we can even go D apostrophe G-U-Y named Guy.
I feel like that doesn't center the word Doug enough.
It doesn't seem Doug enough to you?
Yes, I want the O and the U there.
Do you do a scary name for on your socials for the month of October?
I like did Ghoul once, but it, who has the energy? It's like it's not a funny pun when your name is just like one syllable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could go with like Fly Branham or something.
All right,
the Fly Branham.
I would like to pitch another episode title. Are you ready for
okay.
it?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. The Last of the Guy Heekins.
Oh my God. Doug Last of the Mohicans.
No, of the Guy Heekins.
Oh, sorry. I don't know what happened there.
It's a bad pun. It's barely a pun.
Yeah. No, it's really, that's really something. Doug Last of the Guy Heekins. I'm in. Forget about that other one. I'll phone it in after the show. Okay, so Guy Branum, I do a oh, when we were talking about the scary names, I wanted to tell you one that I thought was really clever, is that Deanne Smith was on the show last episode. Uh-huh. And she just puts parentheses around NNESMI to highlight that, you know, the first three letters and the last three letters of her name spell death.
Oh, yeah, that is fun. Yeah,
I thought that was a fun one. Okay, so I do an anagram of people's names, our guests' names, and you know, it's usually pretty silly, and this one's no exception. With the letters in Guy Branum, I, you know, was able to switch them around, and I came up with Ray Gun Bun.
Whoa! Wow!
Bum, excuse me, Ray Gun Bum. I said bun, but I meant bum. Ray That's Gun great. Bum.
Yeah. I mean, I've always, you know, I've always thought that mine has the power to destroy.
I will kill you with my ass. Well, like I said, this has been terrific. Thank you for being here. What would you like to, I know you said on Douglas Movies the other day that you know, you don't have any new things to promote because of all this strike nonsense, but yes. People should find a show called Platonic on one of the streamers. And
yes.
I say, enjoy the hell out of it. I really enjoy that show. Speaking of stakes, isn't it like the first series in a long time where you felt like, sure, they have arguments and there's problems, but the stakes are never really what the show is about?
Yes. I mean, I like, there needs to be more shows like that. Not everything can require me to listen so hard and watch people in darkness and follow plot all the time.
Yeah. Just get some characters that are interesting and have them say funny shit.
Yeah.
You know, why not? Okay, so what else? Is there anything else we should talk about? I mean, you can also find Bros wherever that's currently living.
And I have a book. My book is called My Life as a Goddess. And in it, I talk about pop culture and movies a lot.
I love it. And, you know, welcome back on Doug Loves Movies anytime. And
Doug Mellor... We need to give the people of America like a breather. I did a lot of your show. We also need to spend some time not around each other for a while, Doug. Frankly, yeah. I think we were both getting on each other's nerves a lot.
Let's go out and see some other movies and come back and
yes.
trade notes. Especially I'm very excited. I do like that you seem to really focus on knowing what's going on with all the Oscar nominated movies, and I'm super into that.
Yes, it's my passion.
Doug Mellard, what do you got to plug, buddy?
I'll be at the Vermont Comedy Club October 5th through the 7th, opening up for Dan Cummins. And then, as you mentioned earlier, I'll see you here in Austin, Texas at Cap City Comedy Club October 24th. What about you?
I love it. Well, you know, all of my dates are at DougLovesMovies.com. And I've got some fun stuff coming up in a few places like Cleveland and the aforementioned Austin show, San Diego, Tacoma. All those are coming up in the next few weeks. And thanks again, Guy Branum.
Thanks so much for having me. This is super fun.
As always, Doug Last of the Guy Heekins.
Got it.